Hello, I'm Hugh Dennis, and with us are Andy Zaltzman, Rose Matafeo, Beardy Man, Gemma Arrowsmith, and Luke Kepner, who, because Steve's not here again, is having another go at saying...
The Now Show!
Let's be honest, that still needs a bit of work, doesn't it? First, though, it's been budget week. Traditionally, the budget is like a fracking site in Lancashire. Everything seems fine at first, but it only takes a couple of days for cracks to start appearing. By Thursday, it had produced a resignation. Sports Minister Tracy Crouch going over what she saw as a broken promise to deal with gambling. It drew an immediate response from the industry.
The odds on a minister resigning over fixed odds betting are on your screen now.
In the rest of the budget, though, there was money being handed out all over the place and priorities were clear.
£420 million for potholes.
£400 million for schools.
Yep, it's official. Potholes are more important than schools. Schools need to recognise that in the curriculum.
Geography. What causes potholes?
History. 65 million years ago, an asteroid hit the Earth, causing the first pothole.
RE. Why did it take the three wise men 12 days to arrive at the stable? Because Balthazar had to wait for the AA after he hit a pothole. Chemistry. Does anyone know the chemical formula for tarmac?
I do.
Good. Can you please explain it to the local council?
You think everybody would be pleased by the pothole announcement because everybody hates potholes. But brilliantly, BBC News, who, as we all know, are obsessed with balance, decided they needed to find someone who was pro-pothole. They found someone called Fred, who runs a vehicle repair business, and asked him whether getting rid of potholes might put him out of work. He said,
no.
If the BBC really wanted to give the other side of the pothole controversy, they needed to look closer to home. The end of potholes will be a disaster for BBC local radio. They'll have nothing to talk about in phone-ins, which will go from sounding like this...
First, let's talk potholes.
Watch out for these potholes out there.
On a blitz of potholes in the borough.
Pothole reporting websites.
Potholes in Wales.
Fixing all of London's potholes.
And don't think that I won't be talking to him about potholes.
Gone from that to having to find a new subject. I imagine in the tradition of local radio, inspiration will strike.
So, on the show today, our new phone-in topic, who remembers potholes? Hey, remember those days? Do get in touch here on The Morning Moaning.
Schools, meanwhile, were given £400 million for the...
Little Extras.
Which is a very strange name for children. Philip Hammond also announced the end of PFI, prompted, of course, by the demise of Carillion. I don't know much about that because I don't watch Game of Thrones. Also announced was the design for a new 50p coin to mark Brexit Day. It's basically a regular 50p, except on the back it says...
Friendship with all nations.
And it was greeted rapturously by the Sun newspaper, who've campaigned tirelessly for it, arguing that it would be...
an enduring gesture to mark Brexit as a landmark national moment.
Another idea to mark Brexit as a landmark national moment would be a plan for Brexit. But a new coin is clearly easier. Although quite how much it signifies a landmark national moment, a seismic shift in economic and geopolitical status, is questionable. To put it in context, other recent themes for the 50p have been Peter Rabbit and Paddington Bear. How does Brexit fit in?
The 27 leaders of Britain's neighbouring countries gave the new 50p coin a hard stare.
It's also 50p. Euro 96 got a £2 coin, and we issued a £5 coin for Prince George's 5th birthday. Meanwhile...
Friendships with all nations.
...sits alongside Squirrel Nut... Benjamin Bunny, Tom Kitten and Jeremy Fisher. Although, to be fair, all four of them are currently helping negotiate Brexit as we speak. Meanwhile, Shadow Chancellor John Statler off the Muppets McDonald surprised everyone this week. Firstly, he turned up to the Today programme with cuts on his face, having tripped on the way to his house, and then later in the week, he backed the Tory tax cuts.
Have you seen what John said? Look.
Well, that doesn't sound like him.
No. I think the blow to his head may have affected his politics. Shh, here he comes.
Land of hope and glory. Oh, hello all. Sorry I'm late. Had trouble parking the car.
Oh, don't you come in by bus?
Oh, don't be silly. There's nowhere to put my golf clubs. Right. Need to catch up on the papers. Hang on. Where's the mail?
You don't normally want the mail.
What, and Miss Fred Bassett, are you nuts? Hilarious. Right, what's on the agenda? Quick, though, there's a repeat of Top Gear about to start on day.
Out of interest, did you get anyone to look at that head injury, John?
You're joking, aren't you? You won't catch me trusting the NHS.
OK, we need to talk.
According to one newspaper's chart, the people who stand to gain the most from this budget are well-off pensioners, the Tories deliberately targeting what they see as their base, the disgruntled middle-aged and elderly. Future budgets might want to go a little bit further with that.
This year, I have managed to find additional monies from the public purse to deal with our biggest social problems. Yeah! £2 million will be allocated to stop people talking in the cinema. £1 million to re-educate guards on trains who think people prefer funny announcements. And there will be money to help those over 80 to stop looking at every coin in their purse when paying in the supermarket.
Of course, you can never please everyone. The AA had actually asked for £1 billion to repair potholes, but the Treasury gave them half on the basis that it's essentially just a building job.
How much to fix these potholes?
Oh, it'll cost you £1 billion, eh?
Could you do it for less?
Well, there's the Labour seat, the traffic cones, the high-vis jackets, the signs that say, caution, workforce in road, when there aren't any.
Any reduction for cash?
Well, you can't do that, can you?
Aren't you Her Majesty's Treasury?
Yes, but we've got a lot of 50p coins we need to get rid of.
The whole budget, though, will become null and void in the event of a no-deal Brexit, in which case all bets are off. And judging by his previous pronouncements, Philip Hammond himself will probably alter his tone. Instead of
£900 million in business rates relief for small companies and £650 million to rejuvenate the high street,
he'll be more along the lines of
run for the hills!
So now, please give a very warm welcome to writer, comedian, and the best thing to come out of New Zealand since Lamb, it's Rose Matafeo.
On Tuesday, rapper Kanye West announced on Twitter that he would be distancing himself from politics, claiming that his eyes are now wide open to the idea that a celebrity has been used to spread messages he does not believe in, which is, funnily enough, the exact reason I broke up with three of my five ex-boyfriends. Now, for those of you who don't know who Kanye West is, from the years of 2003 to 2010, he was a powerhouse hip-hop producer and musician. And from July 2010, around about the time he joined Twitter, it's gone pretty steadily downhill from there. And if that still doesn't ring any bells for you listeners, then I assume you're somehow listening to this from a remote cabin in the Outer Hebrides and have chosen to no longer participate in civilization. And to be honest, with the year that we've had, not a bad idea, mate. Now, his friendship with Donald Trump has been somewhat bewildering, especially earlier this year when Kanye was seen sporting a Make America Great Again cap alongside a Colin Kaepernick jumper, being quite literally a walking contradiction of political support. And this affiliation with Trump has led to a backlash against Kanye's body of work. Some curmudgeonly critics hate him without ever having listened to his music. And if they did, they'd realise pretty soon that clearly he's an absurdist genius, right? He's a man who gifted us lyrics like "Start a Fight Club, Brad Reputation," a sentence that makes so little sense it almost makes sense again. The whole situation begs the question, can we truly separate an artist's work from their public political beliefs? Are politics and art so intertwined that we can't enjoy one without enduring the other? Can we eat the delicious fruit bit without the slightly racist tasting yogurt? If that's the case, I feel like our heroes in entertainment are dropping like flies. I mean, I blame their access to Twitter, you know, as well as the rampant enabling of sexual harassment in the entertainment industry that has now led to their well-deserved public downfall, but mostly Twitter. I gotta say, it's hard to know whose artist's work we're allowed to enjoy or not enjoy anymore. So look, okay, I have a theory, yeah, and it may be a controversial one, okay? But keep in mind, this theory has not gone down well at most of the dinner parties I brought it up at. But hear me out, okay? I think that in this day and age, what with everything going on at the moment, everyone in this world should get a pass to, guilt-free, enjoy the body of work of just one disgraced entertainer in human history, okay? Just one, though. Just one, all right? Don't get greedy. You've got to pick a team and stick with it, all right? So it's either a Woody Allen box set at home, yeah, or Rosemary's Baby, right? It's your limited edition thriller jacket or The Cosby Show, okay? Pick and choose. Now, maybe... Who's choosing The Cosby Show? Maybe there's a reason why politics and art are so intertwined, and that both occupations attract similarly maladjusted people who love the sound of their own voice. I should know, I'm one of them. I mean, really, politicians are just failed artists who didn't have the bone structure for television, and artists are just people who did too much messed up stuff at university to be able to enter a political career. Although that certainly hasn't stopped many politicians, right? I'm looking at you, David Cameron, you dirty bird. Maybe artists need to stick to what they know. And the same goes for politicians. I mean, oh, the way we sacrifice them every year to Strictly Come Dancing for our entertainment is disgusting. It's like some sort of modern-day gladiator tournament, but instead of a gladiator, it's Anne Whittacombe, right? And the only thing she's fighting with is an unprecedented lack of rhythm or shame. The problem is that we put these artists on pedestals, idolise them when they're saying the right things, and then demonise them when they mess up like the human beings they are. Albeit, you know, human beings with four cars and a house in Ibiza and millions of pounds, but human beings nonetheless. Maybe we need to expect less from these people and remember where their true talents lie and let these celebrities focus on what they do best. Sex tapes.
Rose Mattapeo, ladies and gentlemen. Now, would you please welcome to the stage writer and presenter of the hugely successful satirical podcast, The Bugle, it's Andy Zaltzman.
Hello. Well, here we are, November 2018, just over 2,500 short years into the history of democracy. How are you lot scoring it out of 10 right now? Well, that nervous laughter and awkward silence is indeed the correct response. Democracy is definitely going through a tricky third millennium. America's increasingly unsubtle parody of democracy is heading into its midterm elections, led by a one-man war against the 21st century. Brazil has voted in a man who makes Trump seem like a demure 1950s choir girl talking about injured hedgehogs. Europe drifting towards the far right. Read a history book, Europe. In fact, don't even bother doing that. Just read the blurb on the back of a history book. That'll do, or ask your gran. Here in Brexbritannia, our politicians are feverishly bickering with each other like lobsters in the fish tank of a seafood restaurant, arguing over who gets to sit by the window. We are locked in an unwinnable squabble with ourselves about whether to hold a second Brexit referendum and thus seriously undermine our democracy, or not to hold a second Brexit referendum and thus seriously undermine our democracy. Tough call. Luckily, I have in my hand a three-prong plan to save global democracy. So strap in. Prong one, everyone calm down and grow up. That's a little bit far-fetched. Not really going to play the media, only play with the electorate. Prong two, give the vote to the people who really, genuinely need it. In other words, people who have not been born yet. Logistically tricky, there might be an app that can do it. And prong three, this one is more achievable. End the innumerable cycles of hatred and resentment that skew and debase our politics around the world. Now, how do we do that? It is deceptively simple. All we need to do is consolidate all international, national, religious and local resentments and grievances, all electorally convenient, confected scapegoats, into one simple, easily manageable global nemesis. One world, one hate. And that... That global nemesis, the focus for all the world's displaced negativity, should be New Zealand. Hear me out. Firstly, I will show my working. Firstly, currently, no one hates New Zealand. So it will be an exciting new bogey nation for our politicians to get stuck into. New challenge, freshen it up. Secondly, New Zealand is statistically one of the happiest nations in the world. Easygoing, friendly, open-minded. So I reckon they can take it. They won't even really mind. They'll just beat us at rugby by even bigger margins. It'll be fine. And thirdly, it'll give them something to do. It is a lovely place, New Zealand, but to give you some idea of how little of major significance happens there, their new Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, had a baby recently. She became pregnant about a week after winning the election last year. So clearly, she sat down and thought to herself, wow, I'm going to be Prime Minister of New Zealand. I'm going to need something to fill my day. So I sense some of you are not entirely comfortable with being prejudiced against an entire nation. So let's maybe focus it down even further. Let the world unite in visceral loathing towards specifically New Zealand's cricketers. Now, they are not traditionally a receptacle of global opprobrium, but, well, needs must. And if you're still not comfortable with that, just twist reality in accordance with current accepted democratic practice and give yourselves ostensibly valid justifications for hating them. Let's look at the evidence. Kane Williamson, captain of the New Zealand men's cricket team, prodigiously skillful batsman, seems like a normal, humble, likeable, down-to-earth kind of guy, but he has never explicitly condemned Joseph Stalin for the decades of atrocities committed under his rule of the Soviet Union. The man is a disgrace. Trent Bolt, superbly skillful left-arm swing bowler, caused England no manner of trouble early this year. But he has been eerily silent on the involvement of the CIA in the overthrow of the democratically elected Chilean president Salvador Allende in a covert coup in the early 1970s. What kind of role model is this? Susie Bates, one of the finest women cricketers the world has ever seen, but does she even care about the brutal persecution of the Huguenot Protestants in 16th century France? If she does, she has a very funny way of showing it. Who's with me? Down with Susie Bates! Down with Susie Bates! Do you not want a more peaceful planet? Now, I see, objectively, this might seem a little bit harsh, but politics is politics, and when you break it down logically, is wild-eyed, provocative prejudice against New Zealand cricketers so much more ridiculous than our other current trends in democratically expedient demonisation? From a utilitarian, overall good-of-humanity point of view, surely it is far better for us to unjustifiably hate New Zealand's cricketers rather than to unjustifiably hate people because of where they come from, or the colour of their skin, or for believing in the wrong god, or the wrong gods, or no god, or more often the wrong version of the right god, or the right version of the right god but doing so whilst wearing the wrong clothes, or hating people for whatever biological bits and bobs they have in their underpants, or for the biological bits and bobs they would like to have in their underpants, or for their preferences for whom they would like to share access to those bits and bobs with in the privacy of their own underpants, or hating people for their curious desire to migrate away from somewhere where they might, for example, starve to death or be beaten up and killed, or Mr. Trump preemptively slamming them for what they might hypothetically do with hypothetical stones and rocks when they hypothetically arrive at your borders armed with a lethal cocktail of desperation and a willingness to do low-paid menial work. So, sorry, New Zealand, destiny calls, the world needs you. Rose, you on board now?
Absolutely not. Well, yes.
Let's all meet Monday morning outside the New Zealand Embassy, bring an effigy of your favourite Kiwi cricketer, and let the flames usher in a glorious new era of hope, peace, tolerance and harmony in global democracy. We can build a better world, people. We can build a better world. Thank you very much for listening. Cheers.
So this week saw two annual traditions. One was
Halloween!
And the other,
everybody moaning about how Halloween is too American and commercialised.
Although if you think Halloween is too American and commercialised, wait till you see the NHS post-Brexit. Americans do, of course, make a big thing of Halloween. It's actually a public holiday over there, which is incredible. Imagine having the whole day to plan exactly how to make your house look convincingly like you're out, while secretly getting on with your evening. But even in the US, things aren't what they were. It used to be pumpkins just one night a year. But now, if you want to see a big, scary orange face that's hollow inside... You can do it whenever you want. People get nostalgic for old-style Halloween, but traditions do evolve. Take trick-or-treating.
Back in the day, you used to knock on people's doors, and if they didn't give you what you want, you'd swear through the letterbox, throw things at their house.
Or put some dog poop in a paper bag, set it on fire on their doorstep, and watch them try and stamp it out.
Nowadays, this behaviour is more generally known as midterm election campaigning. Halloween started in the UK, and the Americans just made it bigger and louder and then sold it back to us. They've done that with other things too.
It's Black Friday!
Don't miss Black Friday!
Because doing all your shopping in a frantic rush on a single day, ending in a fight in a car park, is definitely a British tradition. Only we call it Christmas Eve. Increasingly, of course, there's something rather nostalgic about Black Friday anyway. It mainly involves going to actual shops and buying things from a human being. And soon that might be its main attraction.
You going shop and treating this year?
Yeah, I'm dressing up as someone from Maplin's.
I'm going as a waiter from Jamie's Italian.
I'm going as a creepy dummy from British Home Stores.
Philip Green!
A lot of British brands are actually American-owned. Clinton's cards, for example, but they don't use the name Clinton in America because having to check the post for bombs every morning means they can't open till lunchtime. But overall, we're always going to be at a disadvantage when America has a protectionist president who's ripping up much of the rule book. This week, it was the US Constitution, notably the 14th Amendment, guaranteeing citizenship for children born to immigrants but on US soil. The president said,
"We are the only country in the world where a person comes in and has a baby, and that baby is essentially a citizen of the United States."
Perfectly true. The United States is indeed the only country where the baby is a citizen of the United States. There are at least 30 other countries which offer citizenship by birth, including Canada, Argentina, Jamaica, Brazil, Pakistan, and Mexico. But in none of them does the baby become a citizen of the United States. We don't have midterms here, of course, but we do have a close equivalent. It's called a parents' evening and fulfills pretty much the same function.
So, how is Donald doing? Has he had a good first half of term?
Well, hard to say. His economics is good, although his maths is often over-optimistic. He's very imaginative. His creative writing is extraordinary, although he seldom writes more than 280 characters.
How about his history?
I'm not sure he knows any, judging from his essay, Why Trade Wars Are Good.
Physics?
He harbours a few fundamental misconceptions.
What do you mean?
He thinks he is the centre of the universe. I won't get into his theory of where the sun shines out of.
And how is he getting on with Melania?
Oh, you mean chemistry?
Yes.
Non-existent.
By popular demand, would you please welcome to the stage the musical mastermind that is Beardy Man!
Is anyone here a fan of Earth being able to harbour life? Well, I've got bad news for you. This week we learnt from a WWF report that human activity has killed off 60% of the planet's species. Life on Earth is suffering. And what do we do when we see something in distress? That's right. We put it out of its misery! We can do it! We can get to 100%. It's the only humane thing to do, and you know it. Sometimes, doing the right thing is hard. But it's for the best.
The creatures of the world have been suffering far too long.
The fish are full of plastic. Nearly all the bees are gone.
So it's time we did the right thing. We can't sit idle. Try, yeah, don't draw it out. Let's get it over with.
Drive your car for every journey. Throw out your recycling bin.
We can help them if we try. Let's remember the good times.
It's more kind to let them die.
So let's just make this quick. The polar bears are hungry. The birds can't feed their brood.
This tiger's feeling lonely. Panda's just not in the mood.
So it's time we did the right thing. We're together to end their plight. So leave your lights all on. Leave your engine running overnight. Don't try it out. Let's do it rapidly. Buy 1,000 plastic straws on eBay and throw them in the sea.
Turn up the aircon and the heating for the creatures of this land. It's for their own good, they will understand. Don't throw it out. It's an act of mercy. Use disposable umbrellas made of ivory. We tried really hard to save them, but now we know that it's too late. They've had a real good inning. So let's not make them wait.
Shh! No more tears, only dreams.
So this week the papers reported that British applications for Irish passports have soared since Brexit was announced. The right to an Irish passport, of course, can come from having an Irish grandparent, not available to all of us. So we thought we would ask the audience, what's the most useful thing your grandparents have passed on to you?
An unexploded hand grenade that they kept on the hall table.
What's the most useful thing your grandparents passed on to you? My parents.
This one is just very wholesome. Good morals, to be kind and respectful. Loser!
What's the most useful thing your grandparents have passed on to you? The opportunity to get on the housing ladder when they die.
Thank you for listening, and goodbye!
You've been listening to The Now Show, starring Hugh Dennis, Andy Zaltzman, Rose Matafeo, Beardy Man, Gemma Arrowsmith and Luke Kempner. It was written by Steve Punk, Hugh Dennis and the cast, with additional material from Catherine Brinkworth, Gareth Gwynn, Charlie Dinkin and Laura Major. The song was written by Beardy Man and Jay Foreman. The producer was Matt Strong, and it was a BBC Studios production.